Chargers and the New York Giants have exchanged their draft picks.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Eli Manning and Philip Rivers.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
Two back on the Fan. BC, see you, Jerry. Jerry's languishing here. Yeah, Jerry, you okay with it, bud? How's Hedgehog doing?
He's looking for that point. Oh, look at that rash.
Oh, dude, yikes.
That looks nasty.
Recco's had a tough go with those creatures.
Have a good weekend, Jerry.
See you, Jerry. Be good, dude. All right, it's BT and Sal, 1103 here. 888-808-1019. Back to the Roger stuff in a moment. So, let me just incorporate something on the Giants, and not about, you know, is Daniel Jones good enough to win? Forget about that for a moment, though that's obviously a big story, and will be all year. The ability to decipher, for all of us, like what a franchise is healthy and what a franchise is not, is fairly simple. Now, maybe there's some shades of gray with certain situations that make it a little tougher to interpret, but for the most part, you know. Isaiah Thomas is Knicks, not healthy. You know, Leon Rose's Knicks, incredibly healthy. As much as we talk about the Yankees, well, they didn't do this, and, you know, Cashman, well, what's up with that? The Yankees are a stable, healthy franchise. No drama, pump-out wins, on the short list to win every year, pretty much, okay? Healthy franchise. The Giants were always healthy until they lost their way. And the merry-go-round with coaches, the disrespect of Coughlin, at least the way Coughlin saw it, the mess with Eli and Geno and just a butchering draft picks, they were awful. And I think a lot of that is on ownership. No question. Now, what ownership did, and they needed to do this, and I didn't, even Tiki didn't know that they would do this because we were working together when it happened. We both thought they had to leave their franchise and get some new blood. And get some different thoughts and just almost relinquish the chalkboard to somebody else for ideas, right? They did that. They went to Buffalo, brought in two winners. Okay. So the Giants right now are healthy. I'm here to tell everybody. Why? Because when you listen, after not being healthy for 10 years, when you listen to John Mara, what he said about, you know, I was not comfortable giving up all that for the quarterback and, you know, I didn't really want to do it, but at the end of the day, I let those guys make the decision. I think that the Giants stepped in too often, and he, including him, and got his fingerprints on some things that derailed the team for a while. I think John Mara's finally learned again to let them do their job, and if they wanted to give up 5 or 6 first-round picks for Drake May, he would have acquiesced and allowed them to do that. They made the football decision not to, and he said, I'm with that as well. I think the Giants are healthy again.
See, I'm not buying it. I see the exact opposite. Don't you think that the decision-makers feeling that pressure from Mara could be impacted? Where he goes in and says, like, you shouldn't be saying anything. And I get he's the owner, he can say what he wants. He seems like a very nice man. I'm rooting for him. It's very easy to root for the Giants organization. We talked about that, especially after watching them behind the scenes in Hard Knocks. However, put yourself in Joe Shane's spot. And you're happy to have the job. The powerful, almighty owner, John Mara, comes into the room and is basically saying, you know, I'm not going to like the idea of losing Saquon Barkley here. And I'm not going to like the idea of trading all those, you know, picks for a quarterback. And maybe Joe Shane would like the idea. And by the way, this could pertain to David Stearns as well. Maybe David Stearns at the trade deadline really wanted to sell off pieces. But the pressure of the owner and the team is winning, maybe he felt he had to acquiesce to Cohen. And it could be to a detriment. Same thing here. Maybe Joe Shane said, all right, well, we're not going to sign Saquon Barkley at this extent. And I also don't want to rip the owner's heart out and take that chance. Or forget about even hurting the owner. But knowing that if he does go all in for this quarterback, who he may truly believe in, if he does do that and it doesn't work and there are any signs of negativity even early on, he's going to be in big trouble here because the owner made it very clear he preferred not to do that and stick with Daniel Jones again. I think that in part, that's why Joe Shane signed Daniel Jones in the first place, because of the owner. That was the talk back then.
Yeah, well, and I agree with that to an extent.
So everything we've heard from the owner has been in accordance with that.
Yeah.
And I just, like, if our boss comes in here and says, well, you guys can do what you want, but if you start talking about this, I don't know.
This could happen. That's happened before.
Well, understood, but then, like, for me...
Hey, it's your show. Do as you want. But if this goes wrong, or, you know, that's on you guys.
Right, so for me...
So we've had that freedom, and then we do what we think we have to do for the show.
Right, but if a boss is saying what he prefers, it is going to impact you. It is human nature.
It's going to infiltrate your thought process.
100%.
But it doesn't mean it's going to sway you to do what they want you to do or what you think that they want you to do.
But you can argue that Joe Shane, in the case of Daniel Jones, has done what his owner has wanted. And he tried to do it with Saquon Barkley, but it just got so ridiculous that he had to let his owner down and say, we can't go to this extent for Saquon.
Okay, two very different things.
Yeah, understood. Let's stick with the Daniel Jones.
The Saquon stuff is good. Right. I'm happy you bring that in. That's a very good point. To me, objectively speaking, take away all the Saquon jerseys, all the love.
Right.
Great young man. All right, the face of the Giants for a couple of years. I think objectively speaking, every single football person, when you incorporate like the Giants roster, cap situation,
you can't bring
his age.
Back. Yeah.
They made the right decision.
100%.
Okay.
Which is why it was easier for Shane to do so, even though the owner didn't love it.
Yeah, sure.
Because it was clearly the right decision.
So we would both say that they're one for one so far.
100%.
Even though it's probably not what Maris, from a sentimental point of view, wanted, right?
Yes, and I love that he did it in spite of what the owner preferred.
Okay. Now, do we think that in giving Daniel Jones, get back to Jones, giving Jones the extension that... there would be a universal outpouring of negative reaction to the contract after the year that he had?
No.
Exactly.
No, but...
So
but
to
I
me, they're
that,
two for two.
Right, but...
So
but,
no matter what Mara
no.
thought or wanted, they did the right thing both times.
No, they didn't.
Why?
Because Daniel Jones isn't the guy. Unless you believe
you
that he's the guy.
You couldn't let him walk, Sal. There's no way you could have let him walk. There's no way!
Well, they could have also handled it differently.
How?
Franchise tag Daniel Jones.
That's true. No, they could have done
Barkley.
That. That's fair.
And
that,
they didn't
that
do that.
Fair.
And they decided that Daniel Jones was a $40 million a year quarterback, and now we're still, let's find out what it is. And Mara's saying the same thing he said since year two, three, four. We've done everything we could to screw this kid up. Last year, I know he got hurt, but we couldn't protect him. He had no time to make a decision. Now we got him the weapon. And that is why I said yesterday what I did, where I don't like the way the Giants have built this team, because I think they're doing everything they can to build a team to have Daniel Jones succeed as opposed to replacing Daniel Jones. Like, you could build a brand new house if the infrastructure isn't good.
Yep.
It doesn't matter how you dress it, how you paint it, what new things you put on it.
If the infrastructure's broken, I don't think Daniel Jones is broken.
Well, I don't think he's the guy. So
I
now,
agree, but there's, the foundation's not completely, it's salvageable. There's a difference.
Is it?
I think it is, to an extent.
But again, it's going to be now year six, and we're still going to find out. You can make a case that there is some good from Daniel Jones, and maybe it is salvageable, and you can make a case that it's not. So, which is why we still don't know going into year six, and therein lies the problem to me, but... I think Daniel Jones is here. Now, Daniel Jones made it tough on him with having the success that he did year one under Brian Daboll, getting the postseason, winning the road playoff game. We know all that. He made it difficult on the Giants and Joe Shane, but I do believe that Mara wanted him back. And I think that pushed Shane in that direction to maybe not franchise tag him and to keep him here and give him the two-year contract and further evaluate Daniel Jones.
I do agree that Mara was strongly implied or maybe just overtly stated, we got to bring him back.
Right.
Maybe. Okay. But I don't think that was a bad thing in real time. See, there's the evaluation of Daniel Jones's contract now, off the injury,
I think
off
it was
a bad
even
season.
Worse then.
Off the road playoff win?
Oh, because based off his history. Like, we argue, I didn't think he was going to get anywhere near $40 million. You want to say you're bringing him back at 25, 30, whatever, $40 million for Daniel Jones?
But that's, so you get
and
wrapped up.
No, yeah,
you
but, all right, in the money, fine. But even in that 1 year, how many touchdowns did he throw for? And we
all about knew, the 15, the good year when they won? 15.
Yeah, right,
and he ran for 7 or 8.
And we all knew that it was not sustainable to continue that
No,
type
but we
of
also thought that, I don't want to say they. What I thought was... 15 is, I mean, it's just a meager total.
Right.
Nobody's going to, I mean, that's awful.
So you can't win like that sustainably. They did that, exactly.
Understood.
Right.
But to me, I kept saying, all right, man, look at who they're running out there. And I know you fall victim to the, with a spruced up offensive line and maybe another weapon. That's why they brought in Darren Waller, et cetera. I thought there was maybe another level, not a level where he's top 5 or top 7 or even top 10 in the NFL, but good enough to bring back with the limited contract. So I can't crush him.
You think Mara's a hands-on owner?
I do, but I don't think... Yes.
Me too.
But not in the way of getting in business.
I don't think BT.
So.
His presence is a big one. And I'm not, again, I don't know like what the rules are with other owners around the league. For me, what I would prefer to see, just putting myself in Joe Shane's position, is clearly you have to answer to certain things. That's fine. I don't know if I'd want the owner lurking before decisions are being made, as decisions are being made. Hey, you know, I'm really going to lose some sleep if Barkley goes elsewhere. That's putting pressure, unnecessary pressure on Joe Shane. What I would want is somebody lets me make the decision, and then after I make that decision, he comes in and says, well, why'd you do this? And then I explain to him why I did it, and then we'll see how it plays out. And if it works out in the wrong favor, then I'm going to pay the price for that. But I want to be able to be left alone and make the decisions. And I feel like Mara's presence there, and I get he's the owner, he can do whatever he wants, but I feel like that presence and pressure by saying how much he loves Jones, how much it makes him uneasy thinking about trading the draft and all the picks to get Drake May, that puts unnecessary pressure on Joe Shane to make whatever his true decision is. It could be one and the same. Maybe his true decision was, I'm not giving all this up for Drake May. But maybe it was, or maybe it would have been, had he not had that pressure on him from Mara.
888-808-1019 BT and Sal, Brandon, Tierney, Sal, Licata. Let's get back to you. Obviously, talking about the Jets as well. Should you play Rodgers, the new kickoff rule from last night? John's in Randolph. What's going on, John?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
First of all, I should refer to the onside kick rule as the worst rule. It's the second worst rule in organized major sports.
What's the first?
It should just be deleted because it's useless.
What's the first?
Only thing first is the ghost runner in baseball.
Okay.
Yeah. I actually like that.
Speeds the game up.
I don't mind it.
Don't like it because 9 times out of 10, one run will score.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not something that
Baseball. It's not real baseball. Yeah. It's more you can't argue that it's not more entertaining. Because it is. You have instant action. There's a runner in scoring position. Instant action. But it's not real baseball. It shouldn't be that easy to just, hey, here you go. Here's a free runner in scoring position. You usually have to earn that. So I agree that it's not a great rule if you're a... But it does make it more interesting.
Well, John, real quick, John, let me just say that I know it's not about the baseball rule. It's more about the football. But the other thing that I would say about that, to me, it's a return to fundamentals. Like, you get a guy on second, nobody out, hit it to the other side, you know, whether it's a bunt or, you know, five hopper to second, sack fly,
you should
score
never,
without a virtue of a hit. Yeah. Like, you know, that's we always pine for the old days of baseball. That's actually a little snapshot of how you used to play.
And it's actually embarrassing when a team, and we saw it both with the Yankees and Phillies the other night, when a team cannot score that run.
Yeah.
It's free at second base with nobody out. Like, that's
embarrassing. I get that. I agree in that respect.
Okay.
But on the other hand, most managers agree that first run, not something to be concerned about.
I got you.
Anyway, all right, so the football one. Now, you haven't even seen this play out.
No, I haven't seen it play out. But I don't like the whole idea of doing it that way. And to have to be losing, it's useless. Letting them know in advance, horrible.
Well, you have to based on, thanks for the call there, John. Again, we were messing around, like, you know, yelling down the street, oh, kick it a sticking. Yeah, I mean, you have to do that because from a formational point of view, the way the new setup is, all the players are on the other side of the field, and if you don't alert them, you just simply can't do it. So, like, you have to logistically. But it's quirky.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm just trying to think through the times in my life where I've enjoyed an onside kick. Like, it is fun to watch when it happens out of nowhere. So, but it's so rare, A, that a team would take a chance on it out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And B, when it is performed, whether it's out of nowhere or just when you expect it, the odds of getting it are just so minimal. I mean, it does create drama. Maybe I don't like it because it gives false hope. You're trailing and you feel like, all right, well, the onside kick, whether it's gambling aspect of it, you know, when you start hoping for onside kicks, you know you're in trouble.
Oh, boy.
But we've been there plenty of times before, and you root for an onside kick, and then it just...
That's called chasing Monday night's games.
Right, well, right, whatever, right. I don't know. I don't want to make too big a deal of it. I understand why some people would miss it, but let's not make it like it's the end of the world with the onside kick not being a thing in the NFL anymore.
Let me get Greg in Rahway. What's happening, Greg?
Hey, good morning, fellas. It's been a while. I don't want you getting mad at me because I'm old, but I don't like changes. I don't like the changes, the rules.
Why would I get mad at you because you're old, Greg? Come on.
Go ahead.
Well, Well, it's good talking to you. Anyways, I just want to say there's these are two facts said last year before the preseason. Andy Reid said it's going to be flag football soon in the league. Tiki, BT, your friend there in South, I guess,
yeah.
He said the players are soft now. They don't play, you know, like they used to do. So things are changing in sports.
I know.
But
I
what
know.
Are we supposed to do?
I think you guys would have enjoyed the 60s when I grew up.
Yes, we like the 80s and 90s and 2000s, just not the same.
Yeah, well,
and more. We are kind of at the core, BT, older school mentality, but you have to evolve. Like,
thanks, Greg.
What are we supposed to do? I mean, you're right. It's not the same. The sport is not the same. It's totally different. And I do think we're getting to a point. You know what bothers me more than the kickoff rules or onside kick rules? The fact that if you touch the quarterback in the wrong way, if you look at him the wrong way, it's a 15-yard penalty that's going to change the game significantly. Like, that bothers me. And we've seen that impact games in negative ways time and time again. So why not just put two flags on the quarterback? And I say this part in jest, but also with some sincerity, BT, I think it would at least clean some things up where you can't hit the quarterback, but just pull the two flags off and then that's it, which you would hope would eliminate some of the stupid penalties. I mean, that is the way that we're going here.
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Which sport do you think's changed the most?
You mean changed as in softened the most?
You know, you can interpret
honestly,
that how you will.
I've got two.
Okay.
It's between basketball and football.
Okay.
I would probably say that basketball has changed the most.
That's my answer as well.
It's a significantly different game than when we were watching in the 90s.
That is my answer as well. I mean, the three-point shot, I don't mean the ABA because that was there in the mid-70s, but the three-point shot was born in 79. Chris Ford of the Celtics hit the first one, right? Hmm. And, like, back then there was, I want to say the average attempts were, like, 3.1 total for both teams.
Yeah.
Now it's, like, 60.
It's insane.
I got news for you. I think there's going to be a four-point shot in the next 10 years. I really do.
Well, they've
got
to do something.
I really do. A four-point shot?
They do have to do something to evolve because now teams have caught up and said, all right, it took them, you know, however many years. What year did you say was the first one?
79.
Okay, so it's taken them from 79 to
in the NBA.
Maybe the last, what, 5 years has become a big thing. They figured it out.
More than that.
Okay, 10 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, pushing the ball up and down the floor, you know, and, you know, get the multiple shots.
The analytics.
Yeah, all that stuff.
Yep, for sure.
So now they need to figure out a way to kind of balance that out because, like, and I'm not trying to be the old man, get off my lawn type thing or yelling out the clouds, or yelling at the clouds, but I don't find it of high entertainment when teams just come down and chuck threes.
I'm with you.
It's just not what the sport was meant to be. And it's the same thing with baseball. Like, if everybody's hitting, and it's not anymore, thankfully, but if everybody's hitting 40, 50 home runs, it takes away from the home run. So when everybody's hitting three-pointers and it's happening 35 times a night,
mm-hmm.
it takes away from the three-pointers. So now how do you combat that? Like, maybe they do add a four-point shot. They have to figure something out to change it because I do think it's just going to be, I think it's stale, but I do think it's going to become even more stale.
I think you're right. I really do. Yeah, my answer would be I love basketball. You know that. I know you do too, but it's changed a lot. My other answer, now it's an individual sport, would be golf.
How's that changed?
Well, you think about, first of all, every golf course now is almost obscure because these guys can just fly over whatever's in their way. Everybody can crank it 320.
Obstacles don't mean anything anymore?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, it's smash a driver and grab a wedge. And back then it was like, you know, hit a driver, maybe even go iron off the tee, and hit a 5 or a 6 iron, which is obviously you can't get it as high. It's tougher to stick. It changes the stick on the green. It changes the game. So I think golf has changed a lot. Like these birdie fests. I'm not saying it's not fun when a guy flirts with a sub 60. It's cool. I mean, these guys get home. It's this 613 yard par fives, dude. They're not even hitting driver three wood. It's crazy.
So because it's become easier.
Yes.
Well, like the NBA, it feels like it's become easier. And by the way, that's in part because of rule changes. No hand check and defense has been minimalized and all that stuff.
Yeah, what about hockey? The goalie, the evolution of the goalie.
I haven't felt the difference.
You don't think goalies are much more athletic?
No, sure. I'm not saying that, but I haven't felt the difference in the sport as much as I have with the other ones. Yeah.
Interesting.
Same with like baseball and football, there are clear differences.
Yeah.
But I feel like I haven't felt it as much as with the NBA. I think I would go NBA and then NFL second.
Stuck in traffic and need to vent? Dial the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 11:28, back on the Fan. BT and Sal here, 888-808-1019. You feeling confident? Or are you feeling, you know, a little apprehensive?
Not really. I'm not really confident. I don't know what to think anymore. I'm disappointed in the Mets because they didn't make big enough moves. They've, you know, Nimmo has gone into a total funk. Vientos, the one guy who you love, he's been carrying this team all year long. Offensively, he's been the one mainstay. He's been an impact middle of the order bat for this team. Yeah, I do think maybe Alonso starts to pick it up a little bit. I'm kind of in between. I think they are what they are. I don't think they're going to play at a high level to win the division, although it is realistic if they did to have that division within striking distance. What is it, 8 games now? But this is going to be a tough trip. I think it's going to define their season. We have given them credit, BT, with the Mets saying that, oh, they're going to be in it the rest of the way. Well, I'd be lying to you if I didn't say a part of me thought to myself, this West Coast trip, maybe it could go sideways and knock them out. With the starters reaching their innings to where they haven't been before because of injury, maybe the starting pitching can't hold up. I don't know what to believe with this team. I do ultimately think they're going to be a playoff team, but I still need to see a little bit more, specifically this 10-game stretch to feel better. I've been going back and forth. I thought they'd add bigger reinforcements at the deadline. So with this team right now.
They're a tough read.
Yeah.
They're a tough read moving forward.
I mean, they did win 2 out of 3 against Minnesota. They did split the series. It just felt bad after they should have won 3 of 4. Like, when you think about their apex on that Friday night with Kodai Senga on the mound, they have not, you know, that was a high point where it looked like, man, they may get to another level. Then Senga goes down, and then they lose the next 2 games, and it's going to take a little while to build it back up. Okay, they won 2 of 3. Well, now they got to go out there and have a successful road trip. We talked about it yesterday. Anything less than 6-4, like 5-5 is, you can't rip them for it. But really, if you want to be taken seriously, and things are going to get tougher now, with maybe Atlanta playing a little bit better, with the Padres certainly playing better, at, you know, if the Mets go 6-4, that's at least, that's a good road trip.
It's a very good road trip. I would take it and stretch it out even further here and just say, I'm sure most Mets fans know this, but if you don't, so you have the 3 with the Angels, Blackburn pitching tonight, obviously. It's the 1 makeup game in St. Louis, which is an odd trip. And then they got to go back out west to Colorado, who stinks, but it's a quirky ballpark. Then 3 with Seattle, who's good.
Colorado's always a nightmare for some reason.
Yeah.
That ballpark. It's just wild stuff happens. Okay.
It looks nice on TV. I've never been out there.
Is it nice?
It's a good place to watch a game or no?
I loved it.
Looks awesome.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was really cool.
It
was
looks
one of my favorite.
Nice.
Like, nothing really stands out, but it's a nice place to watch a ball game.
Well, let me stretch this out further because the 10 games, and let's say you guys go 6-4, which I think right now I would sign up for. I'm you, you know, there's a time to be greedy. There's a time to stabilize. I think this is so important. But then, you know what's after that? It's 3 with the A's at home and 3 with the Marlins at home.
Right. So that's where the season. Yeah, that's where you make your ground up in not only the wild card race, but potentially the division as well.
Yes, but I don't think that is the area you want to make up the ground because you didn't play well on the previous 10 games.
I think
that's where you get greedy.
Yeah, I'm saying 6-4, and then what'd you give me, the next 6?
Yeah, 3 with the A's, 3 with the Marlins at City. I mean, 4-2, if you don't, at least 4-2.
So let's say 11-5 then, I think, math is right.
Plus 6 right there.
Right, which gets them to what, like, they're 7 over or 6 over right now?
57-51 last I checked, but I could be off on that.
Yeah, all right.
I mean, that's...
But now you're starting to move in the right direction.
100%. I don't want to be a victim of, the overreaction. We don't do that on the show. Ever.
Yeah, right. Never.
But I really think, Sal, when we come into work on Monday the 19th,
right,
we'll know if the Mets are in it. Like,
you mean
that's after the last game against the Marlins? So that's the 10 roadies, and then the 3 with the A's at home, 3 with the Marlins.
See,
that is 16 games moving into basically late August. I think we'll know all we need to know.
They are right now 57-51. I do think there's I don't want to say a better chance of it, but we'll know more if they lose on the road trip. Like, I think that they could show more to be out of a playoff spot. as opposed to saying on August 19th, like even if they won 11-5, I still think it's going to be tough to nail down that spot. You see what I'm saying? I don't think you could clinch it then or be like, oh, they're in a great spot.
Oh, yeah, and I mean just where you're still relevant, like truly relevant. I don't even mean standings-wise because you're not going to be eliminated. Right. You can go 0-16, you're not going to be eliminated.
Well, but if they have a bad road trip, I do think that they can be in some trouble here.
Yeah.
If they go 4-6 on this trip and the Padres and Braves continue to play well.
4-6 isn't going to crush you. Then you come back and go 5-1 against those scrubs.
Yeah. I mean, I guess. But that's kind of what a 500 team does, right? Mm-hmm. But the problem is with them, they have not been a 500 team. They've been much, much, much better than that. Think about their record since they were 11 games under 500. They're now 6 games over. And we're talking about going 6-4 and then going maybe 5-1 over those 6 games.
Plus 17, plus that's plus 9, that's plus 23 from the 0-11 start, if I did that math right.
I
did that pretty fast, but
I had the lowered expectations, and then you were like, no, come on, they got to be 7-3 over this 10-game stretch or whatever. And ultimately, you're right. If they're going to be a playoff team, playoff teams don't go 5-5 on the West Coast trip. They're going to go 6-4, especially against the teams that they're playing. This is So 6-4.
And the Padres.
6-4 is like, okay, good, good job. And then like 5-1 against those other two teams should be the expectation.
Should be.
Sounds like a lot, but hey, you want to be a playoff team?
Yeah. Yeah, win some games. 888-808-1019. BT and Sound on the Fan doing a little juggle. The Rodgers stuff. More of a general conversation, how much sports have changed. Obviously, that in relation to the onside kick, the Mets stuff. What's going on, Jack, Long Island? How you doing today?
Hey, what's up, man? So you guys mentioned that the two sports have changed between football and basketball. But basketball has changed more organically in terms of the way the players just play the game. And with football, it's just the league sticking their nose in it.
That's an interesting point because it's not like that. You know, that's actually a really interesting point, Jack. You're stumbling upon something good there. It's not like the league mandated, okay, you must get rid of all the slow, heavy-footed, you know, goofballs like the 7-foot-1 centers who look like Greg Kite. No disrespect there, Greg Kite, who couldn't do anything except, you know, administer fouls and maybe hit a dunk. And now you're replaced by guys who can move and the pick and roll and, you know, splash it from 25 feet. They didn't mandate that. The European influence changed that. The game changed, obviously. AAU culture changed that, more wide open. Whereas the changes in the NFL have been more a direct result of the actual rules.
Right. The NFL is changing the rules because of player safety. That's where the change comes in the sport. And I think because of those rule changes, now teams have open things up offensively. Like, that's been organic, correct me if I'm wrong, where you're having quarterbacks running the football a lot more.
Look at Jalen Hurts. Sure.
Yeah, right.
Michael Vick's been
going on for a while.
McNabb.
The pure pocket passer is basically a dinosaur. I mean, you're not going to see that anymore, especially after Tom Brady, Matt Ryan, maybe the last two.
Joe Burrow's pretty much a pocket guy.
Yeah. I mean, that is true.
But there's not many of them.
I guess there are a couple of them, but those are the rare thing now where the majority of quarterbacks can at least, you know, it's not like they're all Lamar Jackson, but they can run the football to a certain extent.
Josh Allen can move.
But also spreading it out and being more wide open as opposed to bringing in extra blockers and pounding the football. Multiple running backs in the game, which is something that has evolved. Like, it's not all because of the player safety and the rule changes, but that is why we feel a significant change because of the rule changes.
The crazy thing is, I think that, you know, Harbaugh and the way he runs his offense generally likes to go, you know, jumbo, couple of tight ends. Yeah.
That's why I believe in him.
Yeah, no doubt. Greg Roman, you know, if you, now it would be boring, although you take what you could get as a fan. Like, there's a way, because linebackers are lighter than they used to be because they got to run down the seam and hang with tight ends and go sideline to sideline. Like that hulking linebacker who could just wrap you up and tackle.
Right.
Kind of extinct at this point. But if you wanted to incorporate an offense now with you know, the fullback and H-back and multiple tight ends and whatever, I mean, you could really push people around. You could. Now, it would be kind of boring.
No, but everything's cyclical.
You could just run all day.
Right, everything's cyclical, so why not come back around to that?
He could. He's going to try.
Which is why I would actually bet, if I'm picking a future, I would bet the Chargers to win the Super Bowl.
No, but did you see about Herbert? He's got plantar fasciitis.
How long is it going
to
be
out?
Well,
they said that they expect him to be ready for week one, which sounds good. It's August, 2nd? Yeah. I mean, week one is September whatever.
Who's their backup?
I don't know off the top of my head. I'm forgetting, actually.
It's all right. I mean,
it's all right. I mean, what if we're sitting here? Hold on.
It's all right not to know the backup. I'm saying, with Herbert, obviously, if he's out, then it changes a lot. But I still just believe in Harbaugh.
No, I do, too. I have implicit and complete unwavering faith in Harbaugh. And maybe as much as any coach in the NFL.
I love him. Me too. I say that not to predict that they're going to win the Super Bowl. I say that I think that they could, and based on probably the odds that I get.
Uh-huh.
You see what I'm saying? Like, I think it's a good value play there.
It's a smart play, and I'll tell you this. All the dumb penalties and late-game malfunction that the Chargers malfunctions.
Oh, God.
Goodbye. That's what happened with Jamar Harbaugh.
Chargers have been waiting for a coach like this for a long time.
Yeah.
Going back to Schottenheimer, who was good. You know, the Norv Turner, like, they had good teams, but the coaches kept getting in the way.
I know.
And obviously that's going way back, but
I got to give Frances a lot of credit. Do you remember, I think you were here. Remember when I came in before I went to San Francisco to work for 2 years, Mike brought me in studio. Do you remember that?
I came in for an hour. I don't think I was here, but I do remember that.
I thought you were here. I know Mons was here and those guys. Anyway, so I was in studio, and it was awesome. I had a lot of fun with Mike. I was surprised he invited me in. It was cool. And
it was a slow day. Mike had you in studio for an hour?
He did.
Well,
I was on the Yes Network. I was really appreciative of that. I was very surprised.
Big opportunity.
Told you, man. Mike, I used to be a fan. I'm still a fan. Nah, I think you might still be, but whatever. I come in, and now this is in 2011. And, you know, Mike, his arrogance and his confidence. And he's like, Jim Harbaugh is going to crush it in San Francisco. He's like, he might be the best coach in the NFL. I'm like, really? I'm like, I know he's good. And remember, he was just at Stanford.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's not like he was, you know, 5 years in the NFL before that. He nailed it. Like, Mike saw that a mile away.
And why couldn't the Jets?
My God. All right.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Testaverde will take the snap, go to one knee. This game is over. The Jets lock up their first playoff appearance since 1991 on a 21-16 victory over the Miami Dolphins.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, BT and Sal back here on The Fan. We get back to these calls. By the way, Fanatics Fest is coming over, and it's taking over. Fanatics Fest NYC taking over the Javits Center, and that is rapidly approaching. August 16th through the 18th, we'll be out there. That's going to be a blast, man. Massive. I mean, talking A-listers. I mean, it is going to be a big show. And right now, we'll get you in there. Call the number 10, 866-540-WFAM, 866-540-9326. That's your chance to win 4-pack tickets to come and be part of the first ever immersive sports fan festival at Fanatics Fest. From our friends at Fanatics Live, visit FanaticsFest.com for the full athletic lineup. I mean, you want to talk about the biggest names in the industry floating around. Brady,
I cannot
Jeter.
Wait for that. Legit, I can't wait. I'm going to be there both those days, the 16th and 17th. Dude, there's going to be, like, I'm going to have to be careful of my spending.
What do you mean?
There's going to be all these tables around selling, whether it's old cards. Also, I do want to shop for the show because I wanted to get basketball cards as well from the 90s, maybe some hockey, some football, do some different packs and evolve the, you know, Game Time without Boomer Esiason.
I like it.
Do all that stuff, collectibles and I'm sure autographs and jerseys, everything you could think of. I'm going to be like, yeah. My head on a swivel. I'd be nuts.
Oh,
might have
man.
To leave the wallet at home. Got to be careful.
Right there with
me.
You.
Yeah.
One thing that you have that you couldn't live without, like one piece of memorabilia, since you bring that up.
Just one collectible. Well,
like
that's
one
my favorite?
Thing that you have that is head and shoulders above everything else. That's a tough one, right?
I mean, probably, I remember before he passed away, my grandfather had two baseballs in one of these drawers in his old house.
Uh-huh.
And he gave them to me. And I remember some memories stick with you. I remember him saying,
how old were you at this point about?
He died in 93.
Mm-hmm. You were born in 79, right?
Right. So I had to be probably 12 or 13.
Okay, go ahead.
And one was a ball that was signed by like a bunch of old, and unfortunately now like the ink you could barely even see, but like Bob Feller.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know you said you interviewed him. You were talking about him the other day.
Yeah,
that's what made me think of that.
You're talking about
but
50s,
it was signed by like
40s and
50s. Yeah, let's say it was the 40s or 50s, whatever, signed by that team. Larry Dolby was on there.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Those are a couple that I remember. But then the other one was
Larry Doby, first African-American in the American League.
Yeah, so I knew the names then, and he showed me what it was. And then which probably even means more, a ball, just because, you know, I don't care about the signatures necessarily, a ball that he caught, a foul ball at a spring training game in Arizona. Went to visit family in Arizona, caught a foul ball that Ferguson Jenkins pitched, Al Weiss hit.
Wow.
He got it, and that. So that's probably my
That's pretty specific. Yeah. Yeah. Could I guess a year on the Fergie? Was he with the Cubs? No, he wouldn't have been with the Cubs because he was he... Where
yeah,
was
I would think. Wasn't,
well,
wasn't
I don't think the Cubs were out west at that point, were they?
What did they not train in Arizona?
Well, I mean, that the westward expansion for spring training's... I mean, it used to really just be the A's and...
Yeah. Well, he gave me the ball in the early 90s. I'm assuming he got it at some point in the,
in
70s,
the 70s
or 80s. Well, look, I mean, you could look at Ferguson Jenkinson.
He bounced around a little. Fergie, I mean, yeah,
I believe he was with the Cubs at the time, Fergie. If I'm not mistaken. But I don't know. And maybe that's just because when I looked him up.
Gotcha.
And Al Weiss was with the Mets.
Oh, wow.
At the time. So then that could at least... Maybe I'll look at Al Weiss instead.
Let's wow. See
Do you remember him at all or no?
I don't remember the name.
Me
what
neither.
What position?
I don't know. I was going to say
Al
shortstop,
Weiss.
But I
remember Walt Weiss.
Yeah, me too.
Al Weiss?
Yeah, could I have gotten that right? Could I have gotten that wrong?
Sounded pretty specific. It seems like you did.
Al, well, I'm looking up now.
That's
Al.
A good memory. And you still have both.
John Weiss. Where am I not? Where did I get Al Weiss from? I don't know. I got to look this up maybe off the...
I got you.
Yeah, no, because not Albie Weiss that comes up.
Just look at Fergie.
Yeah.
He's easier.
How is it, Dove? Al, W-E-I-S,
correct.
Al Weiss. Okay, I had it spelled wrong. So Al Weiss played from, I knew I got this right. Okay.
Well, he wasn't on the original Mets in 62, was he?
He was on the Mets from 68 through 71.
Oh, he was on the championship team.
So
wow.
At some point, yeah, okay.
I don't remember him. I don't really even really know the name too well.
At some point, he played 103 games for the 69 championship Mets.
Okay.
And he had 215. All right, I want to say he was an infielder. He was a second baseman shortstop. Okay, good.
Okay.
He played with the White Sox, and then he played with the Mets. So anyway, so it had to be from between 68 through 71.
That's
now,
awesome.
If I match up Ferguson Jenkins.
Yeah, go for it. There you go.
Fergie Jenkins.
Well, detective work here, Sal.
Yeah, well, it's fun that they have all these records. So what did I say, 68 through 71? Yeah, so he was with the Cubs.
Okay.
He started with the Phillies, which I did not know. Yeah, you're right, and then he bounced around. Texas, Boston,
Texas
issues. Again.
Fergie was, yeah.
Fergie so, yeah, 68 through 71.
Interesting baseball figure. Hoff, what do you have? Anything that's sitting around the crib? Nothing? The ball that is in my home office that Hank Aaron signed, that Hank actually gave to my dad.
Oh, wow.
Hank handed it to him. No, actually, my dad, this is when my dad was still a police officer. He was on the softball team, right? And, like, I don't know if they still do it, but they had, like, the all-star team back then.
Right.
And so, like, the NYPD would travel to, like, Ohio and, you know, I want to say, maybe Ohio's not a neighboring state necessarily, but, you know, somewhere along the eastern seaboard for the money, not going out west. And you would play, like, the Cincinnati PD, the Akron PD, and it was very competitive, right? And long story short, guy that my dad grew up with in Brooklyn, oh, God, why am I forgetting his name right now? I got so many things in my head. Oh, this is going to bother me. He made the majors, okay? And he was on the Braves with Hank Aaron. So my dad's softball team was supposed to play the Dayton, I believe, or the Dayton PD team. They got rained out. And he said, hey, you know, Chuck, bring your buddies. I'm leaving you tickets to the game. And he actually got in the game. Now, this guy didn't play. I'll remember his name.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't play. He was like the fifth outfielder, pinch runner. He actually played that game that they went to. Never played. And he scored the only run in a 1-0 game.
Hmm.
And he invited my dad and his buddies to go and have steaks and beers with Hank Aaron after the game. And Hank Aaron gave him the ball.
Wow.
That's where he got it.
And then your dad gave that to you?
Well, yeah. Gave it to me.
Yes.
I was going to say, okay. Absolutely.
You
no,
just took it from his
no,
stash.
No, no. That was passed on
and then
very
you,
proudly.
And then Hank signed it to him at that time?
It doesn't say like to Charlie.
No, but
it
he
just
signed
says,
it at the
oh,
time.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
if
yeah.
In 19, I believe it was 1970. Dude, I think it was 73.
Interesting.
Right around the same time your grandfather got it. There you go. Memory lane here on The Fan. All right. 888-808-1019. BT and Sal here on The Fan. Coming up, we'll reset the top story, hit you with the crown, got you till 2. That it's Evident Tiki a little later on The Fan.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Testaverde will take the snap, go to one knee. This game is over. The Jets lock up their first playoff appearance since 1991 on a 21-16 victory over the Miami Dolphins.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, BT and Sal back here on The Fan. We've got get back to these calls. By the way, Fanatics Fest is coming over, and it's taken over. Fanatics Fest NYC taking over the Javits Center, and that is rapidly approaching. August 16th through the 18th, we'll be out there. That's going to be a blast, man. Massive. I mean, talking A-listers. I mean, it is going to be a big show. And right now, we'll get you in there. Call the number 10, 866-540-WFAM, 866-540-9326. That's your chance to win four-pack tickets to come and be part of the first ever immersive sports fan festival at Fanatics Fest. From our friends at Fanatics Live, visit FanaticsFest.com for the full athletic lineup. I mean, you want to talk about the biggest names in the industry floating around. Brady,
I cannot
Jeter.
Wait for that. Legit, I can't wait. I'm going to be there both those days, the 16th and 17th. Dude, there's going to be, like, I'm going to have to be careful of my spending.
What do you mean?
There's going to be all these tables around selling, whether it's old cards. Also, I do want to shop for the show because I wanted to get basketball cards as well from the 90s, maybe some hockey, some football, do some different packs and evolve the, you know, Game Time without Boomer sizing.
But I like it.
Do all that stuff, collectibles and I'm sure autographs and jerseys, everything you could think of. I'm going to be like, yeah. My head on a swivel. It'd be nuts.
Oh,
might have
man.
To leave the wallet at home. Gotta be careful.
Right there with you. Yeah. One thing that you have that you couldn't live without, like one piece of memorabilia, since you bring that up.
Just one collectible.
Like
my
one
favorite?
Thing that you have that is head and shoulders above everything else. That's a tough one, right?
I mean, probably, I remember before he passed away, my grandfather had two baseballs in one of these drawers in his old house.
Uh-huh.
And he gave them to me. And I remember the, like, you know, some memories stick with you. I remember him saying,
how old were you at this point about?
He died in 93.
Mm-hmm. You were born in 79, right?
Right. So I had to be probably 12 or 13.
Okay, go ahead.
And one was a ball that was signed by like a bunch of old, and unfortunately now like the ink you could barely even see, but like Bob Feller.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know you said you interviewed him. You were talking about him the other day.
Yeah,
so it made me think of that.
You're talking
but
50s,
it was signed by like,
40s and
yeah,
50s.
Yeah, let's say it was the 40s or 50s, whatever, signed by that team. Larry Dolby was on there.
Yeah,
Those are a couple that I remember. But then the other one was
Larry Doby, first African-American in the American League.
Yeah, so I knew the names then, and he showed me what it was. And then, which probably even means more, a ball, just because, you know, I don't care about the signatures necessarily, a ball that he caught, a foul ball at a spring training game in Arizona. Went to visit family in Arizona, caught a foul ball that Ferguson Jenkin pitched, Al Weiss hit.
Wow.
He got it and that. So that's probably my
That's pretty specific. Yeah. Yeah. Could I guess the year on the Fergie? Was he with the Cubs? No, he wouldn't have been with the Cubs because he was he where
yeah,
was
Fergie? Think. Wasn't
well,
he?
I don't think the Cubs were out west at that point, were they?
Were they not train in Arizona?
Well, I mean, that the westward expansion for spring training's I mean, it used to really just be the A's and
Well, he gave me the ball in the early 90s. I'm assuming he got it at some point in the 70s or 80s. You could look at Ferguson Jenkinson.
He bounced around a little. Fergie, I mean, yeah,
I believe he was with the Cubs at the time, Fergie. If I'm not mistaken. But I don't know. And maybe that's just because when I looked him up.
Gotcha.
And Al Weiss was with the Mets.
Oh, wow.
At the time. So then that could at least, maybe I'll look at Al Weiss instead.
Let's wow.
Do you remember him at all or no?
I don't remember the name.
Me neither.
What position?
I don't know. I was going to say
Al
shortstop,
Weiss.
But I
remember Walt Weiss.
Yeah, me too.
Al Weiss?
Yeah, could I have gotten that right? Could I have gotten that wrong?
Sounded pretty specific. It seems like you did.
Al, well, I'm looking up now.
That's
Al.
A good memory. And you still have both.
John Weiss. Where am I not? Where did I get Al Weiss from? I don't know. I got to look this up maybe off the.
I got you.
And no, because not Albie Weiss that comes up.
Just look at Fergie.
Yeah.
He's easier.
How is it, Dove? Al, W-E-I-S,
correct.
Al Weiss. Okay, I had it spelled wrong. So Al Weiss played from, I knew I got this right. Okay.
Well, he wasn't on the original Mets in 62, was he?
He was on the Mets from 68 through 71.
Oh, he was on the championship team.
So
wow.
At some point, okay.
I don't remember him. I don't really know the name too well.
At some point, he played 103 games for the 69 championship Mets.
Okay.
And he had 215. All right, I want to say he was an infielder. He was a second baseman shortstop. Okay, good.
Okay.
He played with the White Sox, and then he played with the Mets. So anyway, it had to be from between 68 through 71.
That's
now, if
awesome.
If I match up Ferguson Jenkins.
Yeah, go for it. There you go.
Fergie Jenkins.
Little detective those are the ones work
like, here, Sal. Yeah, well, it's fun that they have all these records. So what did I say, 68 through 71? Yeah, so he was with the Cubs.
Okay.
He started with the Phillies, which I did not know. Yeah, you're right, and then he bounced around. Texas, Boston,
drug
Texas
issues.
Again.
Fergie was, Fergie
so, yeah, 68 through 71.
Interesting baseball figure. Hoff, what do you have? Anything that's sitting around the crib? Nothing? I'd probably say for me, the the ball that is in my home office that Hank Aaron signed, that Hank actually gave to my dad.
Oh, wow.
Hank handed it to him. No, actually, my dad, this is when my dad was still a police officer. He was on the softball team, right? And, like, I don't know if they still do it, but they had, like, the all-star team back then.
Right.
And so, like, the NYPD would travel to, like, Ohio. And, you know, I want to say, maybe Ohio's not a neighboring state necessarily, but, you know, somewhere along the eastern seaboard for the money, not going out west. And you would play, like, the Cincinnati PD, the Akron PD, and it was very competitive, right? And long story short, guy that my dad grew up with in Brooklyn, oh, God, why am I forgetting his name right now? I got so many things in my head. Oh, this is going to bother me. He made the majors, okay? And he was on the Braves with Hank Aaron. So my dad's softball team was supposed to play the Dayton, I believe, or the Dayton PD team. They got rained out. And he said, hey, you know, Chuck, bring your buddies. I'm leaving you tickets to the game. And he actually got in the game. Now, this guy didn't play. I'll remember his name. Mm-hmm. He didn't play. He was like the fifth outfielder, pinch runner. He actually played that game that they went to. Never played. And he scored the only run in a 1-0 game. Hmm. And he invited my dad and his buddies to go and have steaks and beers with Hank Aaron after the game. And Hank Aaron gave him the ball.
Wow.
That's where he got it.
And then your dad gave that to you?
Well, yeah. Gave it to me. Yeah. No, gave it to me. Yes.
I was going to say, okay.
Absolutely.
Well, just took it from his
No. That was passed on and then very proudly.
And then Hank signed it to him at that time?
It doesn't say like to Charlie.
No, but he just signed it at the time.
Oh, yeah. Okay, if in 19, I believe it was 1970. Dude, I think it was 73.
Interesting.
Right around the same time your grandfather got it. There you go. Memory Lane here on The Fan. All right. 888-808-1019. BT and Sal here on The Fan. Coming up, we'll reset the top story, hit you with the crown, got you till 2. That it's Evan and Tiki a little later on The Fan.